Welcome back. We're talking to Daniela Rua and Patrick Murphy, and we're going to turn our attention to prenatal fitness. Patrick, you train Daniela. How did you guys meet? How long ago did you meet?
I want to say this is probably year eight.
Yeah, about eight years ago.
Or something like that. Yeah. I was working on an episode in the show in season one, we had this wonderful stunt guy who's actually...
Chad Stahelski.
Chad Stahelski, who directed John Wick now, but he was a stunt coordinator and is an amazing stunt guy for Keanu Reeves and a bunch of other actors. And he came in and he choreographed this fight scene for me. And we got to talking and we were talking about working out. And I said, I just moved to LA and I was looking for a trainer. He said, well, I know this guy called Patrick Murphy. You guys should meet. And it just so happened that the gym that Patrick works at was right next to where I was living at the time. And it just kind of tried Patrick and...
I help a lot of stunt guys. They have a lot of injuries. Yeah. So I'm the corrective exercise guy who can train someone high intensely without hurting them, even if they have an existing rotator cuff tear or a messed up knee. I could still take their bodies and get a good workout out of them.
With modifications?
Just proper human movement, creating good rhythms, staying away from things that would flare up an injury. I'm just good at programming people who have like Evel Knievel of injuries. Taking their body and getting something out of them.
So it's highly individualized. It's not like you open up your book and say, "Now we're going to do."
I don't believe in cookie cutter anything in nutrition or exercise programming.
Had you done a fight scene before that? Was that your first?
That was my first stunt fight scene. Actually, I think because it was season one. Yeah. That was my first stunt fight scene.
Was it exciting for you?
Oh, it was so exciting. First of all. At some point when I was a kid, I think being a stunt woman was definitely on the table for me. And by young, I mean like 8 or 9. So what did I know about that? I remember literally doing somersaults backwards down my aunt's staircase in her house because I thought, if I'm going to be an actress at some point, I'm going to have to do this. You know,
it's one of the hardest stunts, by the way, going down a flight of stairs.
It is. So I was like practicing falling down the stairs because I either didn't realize that there was really a distinction between the two jobs, or I thought I'd end up doing both or whatever it was. And, you know, my dad would and my mom would take me to stuff like MGM Studios and Florida, and you'd get all those like stunt shows where the cowboys are getting fake shot and falling off the buildings onto mattresses that are hidden behind cars. So this whole world of active stunt acting thing was always so fascinating to me. So I was very excited for my first fight scene. And then because of the dance and gymnastics background, that also helped a lot with understanding the choreography process Patrick and I started training together, and then, you know, eventually met my husband and
a stunt guy.
Right. The irony of ironies.
Exactly, right?
And so when I got pregnant, Patrick trained me before, during, and after, and now for this second pregnancy as well. I wouldn't switch him out for the world.
Well, that's a nice ringing endorsement. You're on your eighth season?
Season eight. Mm-hmm.
Do you do a lot of stunts?
Well, not right now.
Not soon. Right, that's what I'm saying.
I would, but they don't let me.
But through the years?
I definitely have a stunt girl who's phenomenal. But when it comes to fights, I'm always like, please let me do as much as I can. You know, obviously you can't flip me onto my back because if I injure myself, then I can't come to work with the next day.
Right.
So.
Or I have to come to work with you.
Or you'll have to come to work with me. Exactly. I'm cool with that. So it depends what it is. If I have to get hit by a car, then no, I don't do that kind of stuff. If I have to jump over a car, they don't let me do that either. But, you know, for the fight sequences, I try and do as much as possible of.
You like it. You still like it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
More and more.
I think I'm so much tougher than I am. I really am not that tough. People are like, do you have a fighting background? I was like, no.
You seem
not
tough.
At all.
I don't know. I work with a lot of people. You seem tough.
No,
that's
it's all lip.
She's got that tomboy underneath all this
it's
for sure.
Yeah. Oh, tomboy tough. Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah.
Patrick, so do you have specialized training? Is there specialized training for trainers in prenatal fitness?
Yeah. So National Academy of Sports Medicine is a great organization, and you can take education through them, and I definitely take prenatal courses and continue education credits in that as well. But again, once I get that foundational setting, I'm off my own because I've been doing this for so long. Everything comes easy to me on what's appropriate and what's not.
Because you're doing modifications anyway for all of these different types of things that come up. So pregnancy is just another area for you to modify.
Right, and having the corrective exercise background, it's kind of like, it's easy to program someone through pregnancy if I'm a corrective exercise person to begin with, because I don't do high risk exercises even if you're not pregnant.
What do you mean by high risk?
Burpees is a high risk exercise. I don't know if I should get into that. Burpees.
How much of your practice is prenatal?
Oh, I mean, through the years, the last 20 years, I've done several dozen women through the last 20 years, but I don't promote it as mm-hmm. I'm a pregnancy fitness trainer.
But your clients when stay it happens, with you.
Well, so when I first started training, the first 5 years, I noticed women were getting pregnant, and they, okay, I'll see you in 9 months or 10 months. And I thought, wait a second, you can work out. And then I started studying that more and getting into that, then offering, hey, you can continue to train with me. And so,
does the ACSM specialty training for pregnancy, is it more about what to do or is it more about what not to do?
Well, that's good. They touch on a little bit of both in that course, the prenatal fitness course. They're really safe and very broad with it. Again, it's a lot of cookie cutter information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're going to go on the safer tone of the whole book on what to do and what not to do.
Right. I went to both chiropractic school and massage school, and I think the number one driving factor in any kind of prenatal training is liability.
Right.
Which is risk to you as a practitioner, but not to your necessarily risk to your client. So in massage school, I mean, what the complaint I hear all the time is you can't get a deep tissue massage while you're pregnant, because in massage therapy school, at least where I went, it was all about not using too much pressure, not because the pressure mm-hmm. is dangerous for the mother or the baby, but because if you use a lot of pressure and something goes wrong right. in the pregnancy, they're going to come back and sue you. So
right.
it's sort of criminal, because I don't know who needs a good deep tissue massage more than a pregnant woman. But
that's
hard
true.
To find.
Well, know? Just like when in the book, if it says walking, no running, not necessarily true. If someone's an avid runner, they can jog during their first trimester. Mm-hmm. You know, the amniotic fluid protects the baby in that first trimester for a light jog. But mm-hmm. I personally don't have pregnant clients running. Mm-hmm. But it depends on who that individual client is and their background and their history.
Yeah. I was going to say there's probably two things to that. One is, you know, as Patrick was saying, like, what is your body used to before you get pregnant? You know, so if you exercise, if you do yoga, maybe before pregnancy, then maybe yoga is going to feel great during pregnancy. Personally, right. I never do yoga, so I did it a couple times, and I felt super nauseous when I've never felt nauseous before mm-hmm. during pregnancy. So that didn't work for me. But being in the gym with Patrick, lifting, you know, light weights at this point, that works for me, when most people probably wouldn't like that.
Right.
The other thing, too, is I think listen to your body. If something's not comfortable, then don't do it.
Well, you know, that doesn't work for me.
Well, no, but I'm saying specifically during pregnancy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like I like jogging to work to warm
out.
Up. Right, but so, I can tell you that I'm not comfortable jogging even in the first trimester, even though I jog when I'm not pregnant. So I have to listen to my body when it comes to that. Right. And it's like, it's not comfortable, even though I'm used to it. So I'm just not going to do it for 9 months.
Right. I think that's an incredible point. Everything, we just read so much and we're spoon fed so much, but mm-hmm. you worked out before you were pregnant. You know what feels right to you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're pregnant. So if the same things that felt right to you before don't, then
yeah.
you listen to your body. We're so trained not to listen to our
mm-hmm.
bodies. But with that point in mind, you sometimes get the opportunity to work with someone before she gets pregnant.
Absolutely.
Where would you start with recommendations for getting ready to hold a pregnancy?
Well, it's going to go down to the issues of perfect posture and alignment, sending messages to the brain to promote that, strengthening the whole pelvis, the glutes, the external rotators, the hips, and just create a sheath of strength in the low back, and also keep, you know, flexibility. And it's just, I do overall head to toe training, you know, full body. I'm not going to neglect a muscle group. Although some muscle groups are overexcited and too tight, you probably need to lengthen, and some muscles are too lengthened and weak, and those
mm-hmm.
need to be activated.
In balance.
So we have to create the balance of that and create that nice length and tension relationship in the body.
But I mean, what I frequently hear in the office is, my patients want to work out, whether they did before or didn't before. It's a new chapter, especially first baby, right? So they want to work out and get healthy, but don't know what they can do or can't do. And you hear so many things. You run, don't run, lift weight, don't
yeah.
let your target heart rate go above or below a certain area. A lot of them can't see a trainer, you know. several times a week. So where do they start?
Well, if they don't have the professional guidance, then they have to be very smart and definitely take the safer route and do the more moderate things to do. That's an interesting question, because I wouldn't want someone to do something they're not sure about or don't know anything about. And that's why I get hired. I also have clients only see me once every 3 weeks to learn something from me.
And then they go work it on their own in between.
Sure. I can teach someone a lot in 1 hour and one-on-one.
I can vouch for that. I see Patrick as frequently as I can, but you know, there are time periods where I just can't because I'm working too much or something like that. And when I can make it to the gym, which is, you know, after hours for Patrick, then, you know, I got to do what he does with me in that one class and just kind of go with that. But I just want to say something about the women who, you know, get pregnant. I feel like as a woman and, you know, being pregnant, the first thing my mom said to me when I got pregnant was, I'm going to tell you something that grandma told me when I got pregnant with you. You are pregnant. You are not sick. And that was such a statement that stuck with me because, you know, when you get pregnant, society has told you that you're this frail thing. You got to sit down any chance you can. You know, you got to give her the seat, which is great. And it's gentlemanly to do that. But a lot of times I'm like, no, seriously, I'm fine. I'm okay standing for 5 minutes.
It's funny, when I was prepping this and I was thinking about you, I was like, you almost seem like the kind of person that would be offended if I got up to give you my seat. Like, what's wrong with me? I'm not sick.
Well, no, I mean, to me, listen, at this point, if I'm standing for 10 minutes, maybe I'll be like, yeah, sure, I'll take your seat, you know, but but it's more about the reputation of what a pregnant woman represents, which is this soft, you know, again, frail, fragile being. And I think that, you know, we're probably at our strongest at this point. You know, you're doing something that is so connected to nature and God, if that's what you believe in. You know, it's, you're an incredible power at that point. And to put it in women's heads that they are fragile when they're pregnant, I think is really unfair. And this depends on each woman, of course. Like, I have felt strong my entire pregnancy. There are women who are very sick in the beginning and need some time to whatever. So I'm grossly generalizing.
Most people can feel good and strong and healthy during pregnancy. There are some symptoms of pregnancy that affect, you know, morning sickness is very mild compared to what happens to someone. They can't stop throwing up and feel nauseous 24/7, have to go to the hospital, have to get steroids. That is not, you know, quote unquote morning sickness, where you just wake up a bit nauseous, may or may not throw up, and then you feel fine an hour later. And there are people that suffer through their entire pregnancy, and
I feel like those are more outliers than the norm.
They are,
right?
And then you have this whole middle group where, like you said, seeds have been planted. They expect to feel uncomfortable. They expect to not be able to do the things that they did before, and so that becomes reality.
Yeah, and this is a whole other more broad topic. But you know, I'm doing a lot of reading now and preparing myself for birth. And you know, the one thing that these books I'm reading says is, you've been taught to fear birthing, and you've been told that it's going to hurt. And so you convince yourself that that is the result to expect from birth. And it's not necessarily the case for a lot of women if you, you know, practice certain breathing and et cetera, et cetera. But you know, the point is, society, which is made up of men and women, are kind of informing you of something that isn't necessarily true. And you're going with that instead of, you know, going with what your body's telling you.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not
even diaper rash.
Which books are you reading?
Right now I'm reading Hypnobirthing, The Mangan Method, mm-hmm. Ina May's Guide to Childbirth. Those are on my nightstand right now. But even with my first pregnancy, you know, you read a lot of different things, and some things are more extreme, some things are the other extreme, and you just need to have to find a happy medium.
You read.
Not demonizing anybody.
That's right. A start in the right direction to begin with. A lot of people just get pregnant and assume, you know, in terms of birth, you just go to the hospital and do whatever they tell you to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And medicine has changed so much, birth has changed so much and become very medicalized that there are a lot of choices to make, and if you don't know there are choices to make, you'll just be pushed down one path or another. And in terms of the fear, I think it's 90% of birth happens in your mind and 10% in your body.
You and I have these discussions on the massage table all the time. But even what Patrick was saying earlier.
Same with weight training, though.
Exactly.
It's with weight training. People think you're going to get hurt weight training. Well, you can get hurt weight training doing the wrong exercises.
Right.
There's a plethora of wonderful exercises for the pregnant woman. So.
Yeah, and what Patrick was saying, you know, so he's like, what I was taught 20 years ago changed 10 years later.
True.
So as you say, medicine, information, everything's always evolving. And there's so much information at our fingertips nowadays between internet and just so many people around us who are more informed as well that it makes no sense. Patrick and I talk about this all the time. Like, it makes no sense not to search for that information and only rely on one person to get your information from.
I feel like most people, the image of birth that they have comes from what they see in TV, what they see in movies, and what they read in newspaper headlines, right?
Yes.
And if everything I knew about flying in an airplane came from what I saw in TV, movies, and newspaper headlines, I'd never get in an airplane. An epidural wouldn't cut.
Exactly.
You know, you'd have to, like, knock me out like B.A. Barack is on the A-team because... Because
I
would think that's right. I ain't getting no plane. I think what would happen is I would assume every airplane is either going to just have engine failure and fall out of the sky, or be hijacked by terrorists, or have snakes on it. Those are the only three choices. Right?
I feel like the reality is almost worse though, because you'll hear people say like, "Oh, I just flew overnight; it was fine." But you'll rarely hear people say like, "Oh, I just gave birth; everything was fine."
It was great.
You don't hear from those women. You only hear from your friend's 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 friend who had like the worst birth.
It was
ever.
Horrible.
Right. That's the people spread. Right?
And look, this is coming from a guy who never has to do it. But I just...
but your wife did it four times.
My wife did it four times.
You're definitely an active contributor to the birth community.
I'm
though.
There a lot. I watch different experiences, and they can be night and day. Someone can have a really horrible, terrible experience and sort of just was pre-programmed for that going in. And someone can have an amazing, very empowering bride and almost be sad when it's over. Mm-hmm. And people don't believe me when I say that. But I've seen people just like... down when it's over.
Yeah.
Because they're having such an incredible, joyous ride through labor.
I had a mixed experience with my son. It didn't go at all according to plan, but when it was over, my first thought was like, oh, I want to give it another shot.
But that's you.
Did you use hypnobirthing for your first
No, I didn't. I had just, he was early, and I had just started to look into it and stuff, but, you know, never... No, I didn't use it at all. And even now, I don't even know if I'm necessarily going to take a class, but I just want to know about it. And I'm informing myself way more this time because the first time didn't go according to plan.
How did you prep for it last time?
Probably not as well as I should have, actually. And it wouldn't have mattered anyway because my water broke and I didn't go into active labor and I had to get induced because my doctor at the time said you just have to after a certain number of hours, which... it was much less hours than what a lot of other doctors would have recommended, and got induced and tried to do it without an epidural at the time with Pitocin, which was not a great feeling because Pitocin heightens all the, you know, feelings. And so I ended up getting an epidural because after 12 hours I was only 1 centimeter dilated, and I was like, if I just went through 12 hours of all this and for only
for
one centimeter. But at that point, now the more I read, I realize what was happening was I was feeling contradicted from the beginning because I didn't want to get induced, you know, but I also wanted to listen to my doctor, you know. So my whole body, I think, was just not connected to my mind.
Before the birth, did you feel very on the same page with your doctor?
She never said no to me, but I didn't feel a whole lot of support at the same time.
Did you love going in there and come out feeling awesome?
No. I mean, but
that's my thing. That's like my benchmark. Do you now?
Yes.
See?
Yeah,
that's my
benchmark. I changed doctors, and I feel very confident. And, I also know that this doctor that I'm currently with, you know, is a supporter of home births, or was at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's too busy to back home births now, but... when you start off with a doctor who has that mentality, then a part of me feels like if he gives me a medical recommendation, I'm going to trust that a lot more because I know that he's starting off from a natural standpoint, you know, of doing this at home with no epidural, with a relaxed environment, you know, and so I trust him if he tells me that that's not going to be, I don't plan on doing it at home, I plan on doing it at a hospital, but still as naturally as possible. And I know that he has a support system for that. So I trust his judgment much more quickly than I would the first time, than I did the first time around.
Really important points. I feel like in Los Angeles, and we have so many obstetricians and places to give birth, that you could find a person in most parts of the country, I think this is true, or many parts, you can find a practitioner, your OB or your midwife, who makes you feel awesome when you go in, like we are on the same page. And not only does that give you the confidence and make you happy about the whole thing, and just even when they come into the room, you know, we're animals. And so we respond to the stimuli around us. When the stimuli are relaxing stimuli, your blood flow comes into your uterus. When your stimuli are stressful, it goes away. It goes into your arms and legs so that you can run and so you can fight. And if you're in a setting when you're in labor and you don't feel that support and you feel like, oh, you know, we're at odds on this thing, that blood flow comes away from your uterus and makes it harder for it to do its job. I mean, the whole thing you were waiting for is for your uterus to kick in and start contracting.
Right.
Doesn't mean your first doctor is not an amazing doctor.
Right,
it
and
just
I
means
think she is.
The chemistry for you
just didn't
wasn't
work.
The greatest fit.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there's a lot of people I think are great people that would not make a good spouse for me, for example. It doesn't mean they're bad people.
I'm a little biased, but I know you're doula, and I think that you're going to have a totally different experience.
It was the same doula.
Yeah,
it's just different doctors and actually different hospital, too.
I feel like a doula is important, but I feel like your care provider is the most important.
To be on that same page.
Yeah.
I think, and no matter what, I think you come out of it. Whatever the experience is, I think you first of all, safety-wise, what you said is when your doctor says, hey, we need to do this intervention right now, and you trust that provider so well, then you just run in and do the intervention. You're not going to start second-guessing them and asking questions. That's a safety issue.
Yeah,
because if
sure.
you're there and they're like, hey, we got to go do a section, something's come up, and you start asking questions and it's emergency time, it's not safe.
Yeah.
So safety is one, but experience is the other. If you come out and you have a model vision of how you want your birth to go and it doesn't go exactly that way, but you feel supported the whole time and you are supported the whole time, you come out feeling a lot better than if you feel like, maybe I wasn't with the right person.
For sure. But it's interesting that you talked about the circulation earlier to the uterus versus like to your limbs as a fight or flight situation, which is exactly what Patrick was saying earlier. About
circulation
being the healer of all things.
That's also in Ina May's book that you're reading, is she talks a lot about fight or flight. I think there's a chapter called like sphincters.
I was going to bring that
have
up
you
actually.
Gotten there? Yeah.
No, I haven't gotten there, but I've been
books.
Watching her and I watched her documentary too, and she talked about that. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, obviously the vagina is not an actual sphincter, but it works like one. You know, it's like if you're on the toilet and you're halfway doing your business and somebody walks in or startles you or you hear a prowler, your body shuts down and it's like you don't feel the need to go anymore because now you're on fight or flight mode.
Right. I said that, you know, if you're very constipated and you're in there, just what setting would make you more likely
allowed
to succeed?
Yeah.
You know, just some quiet and some darkness, maybe a newspaper, not like your spouse going, come on, you can do it.
You can do it.
If you're not in love with everyone in your birthing room, it's like peeing in front of an audience.
Yeah.
It's just really hard.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, you can do it, but
because a lot of people are like, oh, you want to come to my birth? Okay, I don't mind, you know, come on in. But that's not neutral's not good enough.
No, it's not.
It has to be, I really look forward to seeing you at my birth. That does it for part two. Tune in for part three of this three-part series with Daniela Rua and Patrick Murphy.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash,
often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.